Now, you're very welcome to the Lock-In Soccer Special here on Scariff Bay Radio. We are delighted to have joined us in studio for a change, Jim Madden, back in the, as I say, we're back in for the new year, and a very special guest. He's travelled a long, long way. We won't tell you why he's really here, but we've nabbed him and we brought him into the studio today, Seth Dooley. And Seth has, a passion and a love for football, especially Manchester United. And Jim has informed me that he is an avid Arsenal fan for many, many years. And of course, myself, my allegiances will stay quiet now for a little while. But anyway, we're going to talk football for the next little while. And thanks a million to joining us today from far afield and from across the other side of Clare, Jim.
Yes, that's true.
Jim, you had breaking news. We only had met about 5 minutes and you told me that John O'Shea had mentioned, or had, how would you say, his first squad. Tell me something, your feelings of John O'Shea in the kind of the temporary hot seat for Ireland.
Well, John O'Shea is highly regarded and highly respected. He has tremendous experience. He has coached at a number of clubs. He was with the Irish team a year or two ago. And I think by bringing in Brian Kerr and Paddy McCarthy from Crystal Palace, he has got a very good team around him. I think Brian Kerr has an absolutely incredible knowledge of what's going on in football across Channel, and particularly of the Irish guys. And I think Brian will be incredibly advantageous to John. Paddy McCarthy then is a highly regarded coach at Crystal Palace, has stepped in to take over as an interim manager on a number of occasions, and is very highly regarded as well. I think that they could make a very good success of it. I haven't seen the squad that they have picked as yet, but I'm sure that they will have brought in some new talent and new guys. And there's particularly this guy at Blackburn Rovers that scored a lot of goals. I won't attempt to pronounce his name because it begins with S and has M and D and J in it. But he's a player that, under the previous management, he cried off on a number of occasions. Hopefully he'll make himself available this time for the two friendlies.
Can I throw a curveball in? Brian Kerr, unfinished business with the Irish team?
I don't believe in that kind of stuff. I think Brian is long enough around and he knows the score. He did manage the Faroe Islands, if I remember as rightly, after Ireland. Things have changed in the FAI, and I think Brian is a man who has his own mind, makes it up, and I think as well as that, he will do what's right for Ireland.
Excellent. Seth, I'm just going to, let our listeners kind of give, or you should give the listeners just a little bit of your background in relation to your soccer, where it all began, your love of the game, and I suppose from a point of view of where you come from really as well. What would have been the closest, let's say, League of Ireland teams, or would have been League of Derry City, would have been the closest League of Ireland team?
Yeah, it would have been Derry City, yeah.
And would you have had tendencies now to go down to what were the Northern Ireland sides called? Glenavon? No. What is it? Portadown? Well, no.
Portadown. Linkfield, of course, he'd be.
Of course, yeah, Linfield. Yeah, absolutely.
Clear of them, you know.
Let's stir the whatever.
And tell me, Glentoran, yeah. They would probably be the most household name, wouldn't they, up in the north? Yeah. And Linfield.
Glentoran would have been a big club amongst people my age growing up, you know.
Okay.
Never really kept a keen eye on that league now. Just the odd one on Glentoran, yeah, but nothing serious, no.
And would George Best have been a massive influence in you being a Manchester United fan?
I think everyone from that area is obviously grown up being educated on George Best, but that would probably, you know, probably only discover more of him when I started becoming like an avid United fan and then like digging into the history, watching, because there is a fair amount of footage of George Best, reading the autobiography. That probably would have only came at a later stage as becoming a keen football fan, and alongside being a United fan, you know.
Well, I mean, I think you've touched on a very relevant point, and it is a football fan, regardless of where you grew up. Yeah. I mean, one of my favourite Manchester United players was Norman Whiteside. Mm. And I believe recently, now whether you can, believe the social media kind of rhetoric that was coming out, but I think his wife was very unhappy that basically their seats were moved or they didn't have their seats at Old Trafford. And, you know, it sounded bizarre.
Yeah, because he's been an ambassador now for several years as well.
Yeah, and she came out in the media and said it was a disgrace that their seats had been either moved or taken from them.
Yeah.
You know? But then again, the Glazers and the now, who's our new backer at Manchester United now? Or for, is he for involved?
Well, the name of the company is Ineos.
Ineos. Yeah. And then we have our, what's his name? Come on, help me out
here. Ratcliffe.
That's it.
Was it Jean-Claude Blanc and Dave Brailsford are the main?
That's right.
The trifecta, I think, in charge of the operation.
Yeah, no, that's it. Well, anyway, listen, we're jumping back and forward. When it comes to John O'Shea, I actually saw John play captain the Irish team for the under-21s in Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And said, you're currently over in Amsterdam. Yeah. I remember I went to the Ajax Arena to see the famous 2-2 draw between Ireland and Holland. And it was the handshake or the side handshake with Roy Keane, I think it was the night with Mick McCarthy. Mm-hmm. But the night before, we went down to Nijmegen, yeah. I think it was. And the Irish under 21 and captained by John O'Shea. And he was a standout player even back then, ahead of anyone in the under 21 team at the time. So would you look at John and his couple of games in the Irish hot seat as a good way to get another job?
Well, it depends on what he wants to do. I mean, you'd have said that he's a very safe pair of hands. He's a guy that never courted controversy in any way. He has a lot of achievements in the game at Manchester United. He always turned up for Ireland. He played very well. And it, as I said, he does appear to be a very highly regarded coach. And I do think that him bringing in Brian Kerr shows that the man, in racing parlance, knows the time of day.
Well, he's obviously got ambition.
Yeah.
When he's bringing in a backroom staff like that.
Yeah. He does. And Paddy McCarthy, as I said, is highly regarded. Now, I don't know who else he'll have, but that's the nucleus of a very serious backroom team. I think that the FAI have not handled the appointment of a full-time manager terribly well. I think they seem to get hung up on one particular man. Mm. And I think the chances of him leaving the England under 20 setup was very remote, to put it mildly.
Yeah, they don't seem to have kind of got a grip of, you know, the organising of something as kind of essential as that, getting the right man in. But again, I mean, the English under 21 job for him is a big deal. Again, his name, I don't know what it is about today. Maybe it's because it's Patrick's weekend coming up or something. Certain names have just gone over my head. Everton midfielder
Carsley, isn't it?
Carsley. Yeah. That's what.
Sorry,
I
couldn't remember it either. But
what do you think of Lee Carsley, Seth?
What you said. I don't think messing with trying to pinch him from the English setup would have been it's kind of the same thing of what a lot of clubs are having these days, getting fixated on this one guy and just wasting so much time. Just not having any flexibility with it, and then you leave yourself kind of pretty short-handed with 2 weeks to go and trying to find an interim manager, albeit a fairly aspiring coach, you know.
And Neil Lennon seemingly has gone to the cliffs of Moher and gone off the cliff edge a little bit. A lot of people weren't happy that they were looking at Neil Lennon.
I wasn't terribly happy myself, to be honest. Now, they were all painting this picture of how successful he was at Celtic. That again, he had played at a high level and very consistently played very well. He has no international management experience, but I would have thought that he might be maybe I think the problem for me was that I was thinking, sure, if I was managing Celtic, I'd have been successful as well. You know, now maybe that's been unfair, and that's been unfair to Lennon. The pool that they seemed to be looking into was quite shallow in a sense. Now, there was talk about one of the European coaches who was highly regarded, but currently you'd be inclined to think that the choices aren't very big out there at the moment. Now, I was quite interested that they were talking, or that there was talk about the his name, he's the Greek manager.
Yeah.
And I kind of always liked him. Like, he appears to be a guy that has his own mind and does his own thing. And I think he is quite highly regarded as a coach as well and a manager.
But I'm going to go over the set now. Who are we talking about? No.
Played the fifth on this one.
Yeah. sorry, we're just having that day. But this just shows you it is live TV. the pool that we seem to have had in mind was very shallow.
Yeah.
And I think that John, they might have stumbled on a decent setup with John O'Shea, Paddy McCarthy and Brian Kerr.
Well, as I say, they've got two decent friendlies coming up against Belgium and what's the second friendly? Again, it's gone out of my head. But the thing about it is they, from an experience point of view, and I mean, they tried it before with Steve Staunton and Bobby Robson. And poor Bobby got ill very, very quickly around that time. And Steve Staunton was left to kind of, how do you say, very inexperienced. He had no experience. But at the time, wasn't it, Marco van Basten was over Holland, yeah. I think. And it was a kind of the trend as such, the young manager. Speaking of young managers, Seth, this is down, this is big time now in your camp, right? Erik ten Hag, okay? Are the jury out on Eric now? I would have been a very pro, I said, over Pochettino, I would have taken him over Pochettino, but he's found it difficult.
I don't think the jury's out, considering, just look at the, beyond the pitch this season, what's been going on around the club, inside the club, amongst the players, amongst the board, you know, off the pitch and off the pitch. You think about the injuries, you think about the off the pitch situations with the likes of Sancho, Anthony, Greenwood, injuries to major players like Martinez and Shaw being rolled out majority of the season, new players coming in not fitting well, like Onana taking a while, he's doing well now in the Prem, and then you look at Casemiro, Varane falling off a cliff. So I think there's a lot of caveats to when it comes to Josh and Ten Hag regarding this season, but what worries me is when you look at the trend of major takeovers amongst European clubs, like top flight European clubs over the past, I think maybe since this past decade, since the Valencia takeover, I think maybe it's some like 80% or 90% have been of the current managers, when the new regime have come in, 80% have been sacked within the first 6 months. The other 20% have been sacked within the first year. So the jury might not be out, but you might not have a choice when it comes to
Jim,
to staying.
I would never have been a fan of Den Haag. Well, from the time he came to United, I did feel that, first of all, when he came, there needed to be a big clean out of players, because it appears to me that the dressing room has some serious players with egos and that kind of thing. You said about Pochettino. I rate Pochettino. I think he has a big problem at Chelsea, in that he has an owner at Chelsea who just seems to think you can keep throwing money at the problem and buying players. I think he would have been a lot better, because he seems to me to be a man that is, again, a good man manager. I think that Den Haag didn't deal with the Maguire thing very well. Yet Maguire was captain of England when he took over, the regular England centre-half, and yet been very keen to get rid of him. I think Maguire is a serious guy, may not be the quickest centre-half around, but he's a dependable guy, and I don't think he has ever let Man United down. And I think he was treated very badly with the trying to offload him to West Ham. Now, he didn't go because I think Maguire didn't want to go, didn't actually feel like uprooting his family from the north of England where they're from and his wife is from, and going to West Ham. That also shows you that the top players today, because of their financial situation, are incredibly capable of saying no, and clubs are caught by long-term contracts.
The depth of knowledge that you always have, even when it comes to the families, is just, it's just staggering sometimes. And I remember a previous show that we did, you were saying you met such and such down the, how do you say, the street of Shannon Money, and she has a son playing over with Brighton and all the bits and pieces. It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. But listen, the whole aspect of Ten Hag and Pochettino and managers, it comes down to players at the end of the day, what they do on the pitch. I would agree, as an, how do you say, centre-back, Harry Maguire, great presence, not the quickest. I don't think Ten Hag wanted him as a centre-back because Ten Hag wanted to play a high line. He wanted to press into midfield, and he just felt that what you call Maguire was a bit of a liability, whereas with Martinez, he's fast, he's quick, he's brave, and he's more mobile as a centre-back. Lindelof isn't, we were speaking about this last night, that he's kind of one of those centre-backs that would be a Wes Brown or a third or fourth choice centre-back. But he's always been put in because they haven't had another better alternative. And he comes up short, you know, when it comes to centre-backs. So what do you think?
Well, I think that no matter whether you want to play a high line or not, there's always going to be games when you have to play a particular stopper type.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And Maguire, massive experience, and seems to have to be a genuine guy who will give you everything he has and leave it on the pitch. There are games change and the style of things, and there are times when you just can't keep a high line because the pace of the opposition can leave you very exposed.
Yeah.
And so you need to be able to say, well, now this game against Arsenal, I'll need the stability that Maguire gives. I think the other mistake that he made, now that I'm thinking about it, is that he got rid of De Gea too quickly.
Well, that's a good point, I suppose. Well, the thing is, De Gea hasn't got another club.
Yeah, but I think De Gea was on such
a good point. Yeah, was it a money? Was it a financial thing?
I think it was. And, there's talk of him going to Scotland and wherever. So who the hell does he want to go to Scotland for? He'd probably be better off in League of Ireland. I think that they regret at Man United for letting him go and paying, you know, the money he got in his whatever
race. Well, I'm going to stick with goalkeepers, and I'm going to cross over the Seth again in relation to the players that, as I say, should I stay or should I go from the Clash? Great band. The goalkeeper, Arteta, basically made a choice with the English goalkeeper. Is it Ramsdale? Yeah, versus a new goalkeeper they brought in. Who's better with ball to feet. And did he bring him back the other night in the cup game? And he made a bit of a howler, but he saved him with a couple of brilliant saves. So goalkeepers are extremely, like you were saying, Unana has come on greatly in the last couple of months compared to his start. But then again, Nemanja Vidic took nearly a year. Patrice Evra took nearly a year before they got into the Premier League pace.
David De Gea himself took.
De Gea, the same thing.
But I always felt in the latter years that De Gea was, he kept a hell of a lot of clean sheets.
Oh yeah, no, definitely.
You know?
Definitely.
Now,
you would expect to be keeping a fair amount of clean sheets being one of the top clubs in the Premier League though.
Well, you would. And I think that the back four as well in front of him was quite settled as well at that time.
Yeah.
You know?
But he certainly, there was games where he single-handedly got points for United. He just did, yeah. From, I mean, you know, but it was, his, as I say, his. But would you say that Ten Hag is a little bit too over the top anal when it comes to certain? I mean, you know the way he likes a right footed. If you play in three at the back, he likes a right-footed centre-back, a left-footed centre-back, and then a mobile centre-back as well. If he's playing three, he wasn't too happy about playing Varane and Maguire together, I think. But then again, who's done very well? Sorry, no, I'm going into United. But is our friend who came back at the age of 35, he's been doing really well. Centre-back.
Jesus, hell of a season for us.
Johnny Evans.
Yeah.
I saw Johnny Evans in a restaurant in Manchester one day. There you go. That's my claim to fame.
You got a photo?
I did, yeah. He was a pie. It was.
But I think it was the right time to get rid of De Gea. When you consider how important goalkeepers are for all the clubs in the league at the moment, like obviously it was revolutionised for Guardiola with... He chucked out Joe Hart, who was one of the best performing goalkeepers at the time when he first came in. Chucked him out. That was a major controversy at the time, if you remember, and brought in Ederson, who completely changed the way that
goalkeepers
are playing. Well, probably the top half, at least, are playing at the moment. So I think we did need a change, because you could see even some of the way, even when Solskjaer, obviously we're fairly reliant on the counter-attack. De Gea wasn't able to clip it out to the left wing, you know, to initiate attacks. I think it was a change that needed to happen. And, you know, if it's not going to happen when the contract's out, then that's kind of ideal.
When is it going to happen?
Yeah, well, that's the ideal. He was being paid, was it 300 and...
He was being paid a lot.
300 something, 75.
He was the most expensive goalkeeper in the world.
Yeah.
From a wages point of view.
Nobody's going to come and pick him up, considering the form that he was in.
Well, maybe Saudi Arabia. Maybe there's that was the thing. Sure, but the other Manchester
United campaign for that. Yeah.
Huh?
He'd probably need to start an ad campaign.
Yeah, they'd probably do it themselves. They'd probably pay someone to.
I agree with you there that, I mean, Alisson has changed what goalkeeping, De Gea did, but all goalkeepers, by the nature of the job, make mistakes. And unfortunately today, I find that there is over-analysis of players and focus on them. And, you know, sometimes Sky puts a camera to focus completely on a particular player. And I think that is not the way the game should be, you know. I mean, to kind of highlight a man's weaknesses or whatever. Sure, every player has weaknesses, except if you're De Bruyne. And there, I watched De Bruyne last Sunday. I got a great kick out of it when he did not like being substituted.
No, he didn't. I saw that. Yeah, wasn't happy.
Yeah, and Guardiola had to go and talk to him.
Yeah. Do you find that it's...
For a while as well, he was chatting.
He did.
Do you find that it's a double-edged sword that the, how do you say, the multinational TV companies are looking for ingredients to fill up airtime as well? So if they have an extra camera and they've got an extra analysis, they're making a bigger, longer show out of it, or we're coming back in the evening and we're going to do an analysis show, that it's more and more kind of to draw in the viewer, so to speak.
Oh, it is. There's no doubt about that. There are people. I mean, I find that the minute a match is over, I'm gone.
Yeah.
You know, because my attitude is, I've seen the game, I've watched it, I've either enjoyed it or was bored, and I don't really want to hear some of these ex-players giving their...
Would you not even have a little bit of sympathy now and stay back if Roy Keane was on and he was giving his insights, being the Cove man?
Well, I've come to the conclusion that Roy is more of an entertainer with regard to his commentary. And he's also very quick-witted as well.
Oh, but he is.
I don't think he gets really into the whole
analysis
thing the way Carrick...
What do you say about goalkeepers that you scrutinise them because they have one job, you know?
Yeah.
If the goalkeeper isn't making saves, then what are they fair for?
Maybe there's one or two people that... Yeah, Keane, I've watched a few times, but not anything like some people would watch him the whole time. I find all of this analysis, even watching the Irish rugby team last week against England, and I thought it was, I know very little about rugby, but I thought it was gripping stuff. And we were hanging on. England were playing well. And then the minute it was over, my attitude was, yeah, we were a bit unlucky maybe there with a couple of things. But I heard afterwards, they should have kicked this, they should have kicked that, and they missed a couple of penalties and whatever. But England came out of the blocks like,
But it's strange for an Irish team to be the favourites. And I think we work better when we're at least on a level par or the underdog. Because, everyone was saying during the week, including the English manager, how good Ireland were. And if they play, they're the best team in the world. And he was hyping them up. And bits and pieces, it can kind of get you down. Even in the soccer world. But you speak about commentators and presenters. The Irish matches, I would always enjoy the three lads. Of course, they're not there anymore. I mean, Liam Brady finished up last year, but you had Amo and you had Liam and you had Bill and whatever. But that there was a great entertainment factor prior to the kickoff and afterwards. And I would record the full game, including the lads. And the kids would say to me, Daddy, what do you listen to this for before? We just want to watch the football game. And I'm like, yeah, but just seeing the lads in studio and listening to the way they would be talking, John Giles, why he liked players, why he didn't like players. Oh, it's a bit like you, Jim, the way I like you.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no doubt that them three guys, and the late Bill as well, they were entertainers, really. I mean, they did, while they cut stripes off one another now and again, there was a bit of entertainment. And I don't think they had this television things of looking at this, looking at that, picking this.
No, they didn't.
And that. Now, maybe technology didn't allow it at the time, but it was entertaining.
They had a big biro. You remember Amo at the World Cup and throwing the biro down. Kind of go, yeah. This is dreadful.
You're too young to remember this stuff, you see. I think people forget that. And to me, football is entertainment.
And it's funny, I'm gonna go from that over back to Seth again, because I couldn't believe it was nearly 10 years ago that you wrote a piece in relation to Manchester United to the United Stand. Kind of, what was it at the time? It wasn't YouTube, but now it has
the pre-Gold Bridge era. Yeah,
the pre-Gold. So he wasn't around at the time. This was just for United fans as such.
Yeah, like a fan blog. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was highlighted as, because I remember getting a text message. Kind of going, did you hear about Seth? He got his piece was on the made the United Stand. So I was like, oh great! So I got to read, and it was great. It was a great piece.
I'm trying to think. Remember, I think it was about the how United just. I think it was maybe when we signed Phil Jones to another contract, and about how United just they're never going to be able to replace Ferdinand and Vidic with
Phil Jones.
With Phil Jones and Smalling, I think it was something like that. But
Fergie,
might feel me,
Well, Phil Jones. In fact, okay, he got his wages paid, but he was an unfortunate footballer with fantastic promise. I remember Ferguson played him in the centre of midfield against what's called Real Madrid, and it was just one of those things that he was excellent in that particular game. He played him as a holding midfielder.
Yeah,
basically, But
I think he did the same against Arsenal, and we won 2-0 in the FA Cup.
Jim, Arsenal back to tell me, who's this new midfielder that Arsenal have from West Ham? They got him from West Ham, the most expensive midfielder. He should have gone to Manchester United. He should have played for the Republic of Ireland.
Rice.
Yes. Declan.
Declan Rice. Declan Rice had no intention, in my book, of ever going to Manchester United. He's a London man.
What about
born
Ireland?
And bred.
Huh? What about the Ireland,
Well, I have a theory about the whole Ireland thing.
Go on.
He came up through the ranks and appears he was very committed. I think that he was quite young, if you remember, when Keane was assistant to Martin O'Neill, and there was the guy, that other player, he's retired now, and Keane never liked him. He was at Ipswich.
Yeah.
Walters.
Yeah. And there was a serious...
There was a standoff somewhere.
Between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I think Rice saw that. And he was, what, 19?
Yeah, he was young. He'd only come into the squad.
And I think that he thought to himself, and maybe when he said it at home to his father, he said, I don't want to be part of that stuff. Because it appears it was quite nasty. And I've heard Keane talk about Walters since.
Yeah.
And he has been quite nasty about Walters.
Oh, there was no love lost between them. I mean, as professionals, when they were on the same pitch, they played together. But from a personal point of view, there was no love lost.
It appears that Walter stood up to him at Ipswich Town. And Walter's, like, now maybe, and he did make a comment that I wasn't that keen on, Keane did. Walter's, around the time he was leaving Ipswich, himself and his wife, they had a child, baby, that was special needs.
Yeah.
And Keane commented about that.
Oh, well, yeah, that's...
And I thought, now, that would have been after, you know, a while after that, he made some comment that, you know, Walters, and then that he went to Stoke or somewhere, and he ended up back at Ipswich again. Now, you have to be very careful. Rye appears to me to have been incredibly lucky. He's had 4 kids, 5 children or something like that, all healthy. You don't know how somebody's going to react if they have a special needs child.
Of course not. No. Well, it's very personal. That's something that's very personal anyway.
But I just thought that did Rice see that? And there was somewhere that I saw that he did. And I thought, Jesus, that would have been frightening for a young fella. But I led a fairly sheltered life with West Ham.
I mean, it would leave an impression. Would you not say, Seth? Something like that?
But I don't know. Like, given he seems to have a pretty thran mentality, Rice, for, you know, as a player, and, you know, coming stepping up through West Ham. So if he really wanted it, I don't see, as in if he really wanted to represent
Ireland,
then I don't see why that should completely dissuade him, considering coaches come and go.
Yeah, but the problem you have, and that I gather, is that these guys all have agents, and remember he was quite young.
Yeah.
So you can be damn sure his agent was in his father's ear.
They said that. They reckon that his dad probably could see ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching later on in his, because like, he was that good that he was going to play for England.
Yeah. Mm. And I mean, he has the build of a fine player. It appears to me that if you listen to his interviews, he comes across extremely articulate and likeable. And he has settled into Arsenal. Now, I did think from the very time there was the talk about his transfer, and I felt from bits that I had read, he has no more intention of leaving London than I have, or even Shannon, of course, and for different reasons. And remember, he would have, even at the time of leaving West Ham, he would have been extremely comfortable and well paid. Now, I have no idea whether he's married or not yet or whatever, but he did grow up in an Irish community.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have been very family orientated as well. So the chances of moving away from that, where you have a nice, comfortable lifestyle and go to the darts and whatever. And when he was in Saudi there recently, or the Middle East, and he was out with the golfers and that, you know.
Have things changed so much that I wouldn't call it loyalty, but your passion for your country now gets kind of, how do you say, not glossed over, but there's a kind of a grey area when money comes into it, when a future comes into it. Is it a different time compared to back in the, you know, I mean, would you have had any players back in the 70s and 80s that would have been borderline playing for Northern Ireland or for the Republic at the time? You know, I mean, I can only ever remember the Irish guys, because the Northern Ireland lads were happy enough to be playing for their own, you know what I mean, their own nation. Yeah. You know, but there was never any kind of animosity. It was like you chose whichever one. But in recent years, there's been kind of, they've played a match at under 19, or they've played a couple of friendlies, but yet they still turn colour and they go. You know, was that the same when it came to Declan Rice? Did he play under 21 games for Ireland?
He played 3 senior matches.
Yeah,
he
was 3 senior games.
They weren't official. They were friendlies.
Friendlies. Yeah.
So that still allowed you to be able and to pass.
That's why I guess well. It was only
He is, there's no doubt in my mind, Declan Rice is an incredible loss to Ireland.
Massive. Yeah.
And I think he would have probably had an influence on some other guys that would have been qualified for Ireland as well.
And what about, speaking of that, what about Jack Grealish?
I'm literally just going to say that. Yeah.
Well, I think Grealish, I like Grealish now. Don't get me wrong. But you wouldn't build a team around Grealish the way you would with Rice in my book.
It's a different...
He's a winger.
Yeah, oh, definitely. From a position, from a positional position, sense,
point of view, yeah.
You know. And what about our other West Ham friend there, who came from Man City? He's gone to West Ham and hasn't had a particularly good start. Central midfielder as well. Did he get sent off in the second game? Oh, Man City bought him as a holding centre midfielder. Came from Leeds United.
Who Calvin am I talking? Phillips.
Calvin Phillips. Yeah, he hasn't, I thought West Ham, yeah, good move for 6 months or whatever like that, but he hasn't hit the ground running at all.
I have a feeling he has a confidence problem.
Well, he hasn't played football for a year now, but he was still getting picked by Southgate, by England, though, you know.
But has he an injury problem as well?
I'd say Perrella. He seems to be one of these kind of guys. He picked one up a few years ago at Leeds and just hasn't been able to shake it off for a full season, you know.
And speaking of seasons, I mean, how do you think this season is going to unfold? Are Arsenal going to keep challenging right to the end, or will Manchester United sneak a Champions League place?
I think Manchester United are up against a top four place. The team that, now, I thought City and Liverpool the other day was an incredible game.
Fantastic match, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And... you know, there was claims for penalties and this and that. I think that while a lot of the pundits are trying to think that City can... that City team has a lot of mileage. And I think Liverpool are just that slight little bit fresher.
Suffering from a lot of injuries, though.
They are. And there is no doubt that the big centre-half isn't what he was, the Dutch centre-half. Yeah. And then you look at Arsenal and you're thinking... it's in Arsenal's hands to lose. But you think that the depth of Liverpool's squad is just that little bit.
City also have a thin squad. When you look at the bench, there's always, you know, three or four academy kids in it, and still they manage to rotate it around.
They do. And of course they've landed on their feet with that young fella from the north of Ireland, Bradley.
Oh, for Liverpool, yeah.
This is Liverpool.
Yeah.
I saw him for the first time the other against. Yeah.
It goes back to what you were saying about allegiances and all. You know.
Yeah, that's the thing.
But
I suppose it's like everything, where you grow up and what clubs you play for and bits and pieces, you get influence and all the bits. So, I mean, as I said, being influenced at a young age. But then again, you could also have a parent that says, oh, like, I only want you to play for Scotland. Because your granny or great-grandmother had a, you know what I mean, an affinity. So there's obviously loads of players.
Seeing as you were a Derry City fan, I mean, some great Derry City players stuck with the North of Ireland. Paddy McCourt.
Paddy McCourt was a fine player.
Fabulous player.
He went to Scotland, didn't he, as well? He played with Celtic, didn't he?
He did.
There you go.
And... there was another guy, but you're probably too young to remember him, Johnny Crossan. And the late Hugh Kelly, who managed our Oscar Traynor team, was a massive fan of Johnny. He was a midfield player, played with City or whatever in England? Now, this would be a few years ago, I think. But there was other... Derry has always had a reputation of producing seriously talented footballers.
Yep. But you look at who just retired there recently from the international scene. Controversial man as well when it came to wearing the poppy and all that. What's his name?
McLean. Yes.
Yeah. But he was interviewed on the Late Late Show, and he spoke really, really well about his background, and he was really a quiet man. He didn't want any, you know, publicity and bits and pieces, that he was family man and all the bits. He spoke really, really, he just said, you know, this is my job. I go to train, you know, and whatever. But he said, I'm passionate about my country. And he's always played with great passion.
And you see, I think that he came from a part of Derry City that
maybe he was young as well when some of the troubles were at their peak, and he would have been very nationalist or whatever way you want to put it. But like there was some, you know, there was a lot of, I mean, I remember the late Hugh Kelly, who was a Derry man as well, and played for Derry, and his family had played for Derry way back. And like he used to talk about some of these guys, you know. Now he put them on a pedestal, admittedly, and Johnny Crossan was often mentioned to me when we'd be in the car. You'll have to inquire about Johnny Crossan. Yeah, yeah. And there was a couple of others, their names just won't come into my head at the minute. And I'm delighted to see Derry doing so well in the Irish Premier League as well. There's no doubt the one thing that Doherty needs to spend his money on is the pitch. The pitch is awful.
Up in Derry.
Yeah, the Brandywell.
And did you hear that our latest Irish national manager has been scouted by Bohemians, possibly? But I mean, would they have the budget to be able to bring him in?
I don't think that Stephen Kenny is motivated that way. They'd probably be well able to pay him quite a decent wage. I think he would be brilliant. I'd hate to see him lost to League of Ireland. I think what he did with Dundalk, and wasn't he at Longford Town as well before Dundalk, I think he was. But what he did with Dundalk, he put League of Ireland football on the map.
Oh, absolutely, especially in Europe. Yeah, 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 absolutely.
I mean, they won three or four cups and they won the league a cup number of times. Unfortunately, Derry, that team, he had left, and then he went to Dunfermline, if I remember rightly.
That's right, that didn't work out too well.
Didn't work out. And Dundalk, the team kind of aged and started to fall apart a bit, and they've now got a serious problem on their hands. A new owner has come in, but he left it late to start signing players.
Yeah, it's, well, again...
And the best of them went to Derry.
Okay, all right.
There was a guy called...
Johnny Crossan?
he scores goals for fun. Dundalk released him, and he's gone to Derry. He's already scored 5 or 6 goals in 3 or 4 games. They signed a winger up there as well, and a fella called Georgie Kelly, who was at Bowes, and serious players for League of Ireland.
But it's coming on. It's a pity the ground, they were saying as well. We spoke about this many times, about the grounds and the facilities as such, and they were saying definitely the numbers are up with who's going to League of Ireland grounds and bits and pieces. Definitely. Going back cross-channel again, okay? We're coming to the penultimate part of the season. Man City, Arsenal, and of course Liverpool, okay? And Jurgen Klopp retiring, supposedly, at the end of the season. I think he will go. Some are saying, he might change his mind. I don't think he will. I think he's one of these people that when he says something, he's gonna do it. But he has done a fantastic job. And my biggest regret is that when Alex Ferguson went to see him while he was with Dortmund, that he turned him down, because I thought he was the natural successor to Alex Ferguson. David Moyes was just the safe pair of hands, and that didn't work out, as we all know. What do you think? From a point of view of Jurgen Klopp and what he has done, and me being of the Manchester United variety, I have to put up my hand, and he said he's done tremendous, really.
He has done tremendously well. I think his problem, and I think that Clough knew it as well, there was always going to be the shadow of Ferguson hanging over him. It's like United don't seem to have ever learned that once these legendary managers step down, like Matt Busby, Matt hung over the other managers that came in, including Frank O'Farrell.
That's right.
Like Arash. And what have they done? Every time there's a home match or an away match, the camera focuses on Fergie, and he appears to still feel that he has influence. And Den Haag has said, I went to see Fergie about this, that, the other thing. Fergie should be put out on grass, sent off to watch his race horses, like he has been at Cheltenham this week, and give the new manager not to have this shadow hanging over him. Because there's nothing worse than a legend hanging over your head.
It's a good point, Seth.
There is that issue. especially I think when you have that type of figure hanging around the training ground on a near daily basis, yeah, might act as a bit of a conflict, especially for, you know, Ten Hag coming from Ajax, massive European club, coming in with his own ideals. You know, if he starts speaking, you know, trying to hold the court in Carrington, and then, you know, he looks at the corner of his eye and then he's got a legend just giving him a death stare, yeah, it might be a tad intimidating, a tad conflicting, you know. I guess there is that point about freedom, complete freedom and driving the wheel. But I don't see a problem with him consulting somebody like that, as I would hope that Fergie would have consulted some United legends as well, you know. But that it does remind me of when the idea for United was to keep Ragnick on as a sporting director, director of football, whatever you want to call it. Or was it as a consultant? It was some.
As a consultant. Yeah, he was going to stay on.
And then Ten Hag in his first press conference said, "No, that's not happening." So that kind of rings true to what you were saying about a manager wants to have that freedom, that complete control. Yeah. But then, obviously, he can't have that with Ferguson there.
But in fairness, I mean, the United board seemed to give him what he wanted at the beginning anyway. Yes, with his show.
That was the problem.
And, you know, that was the problem. I mean, he went back to Ajax and picked an overpriced Brazilian. Yeah. And, you know, and they had to pay big money because it was quite obvious that, you know what I mean, this was going to be the way, you know. This is, and he bought and he bought, but not all the players have worked out.
Well, I mean, the first thing that you hear, he didn't seem to realise. The Premier League is a hell of a lot different to the Dutch League or the German League. The only league that's probably comparable in a sense to the Premier League would be the Spanish League, where it's a bit physical and dog-eat-dog a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. Yeah.
Like, I mean, and it's just different. and you're not going to bring in nice players. I mean, Dutch football is, we all loved watching it. You know, pinging the ball here, pinging the ball there. But you never saw a tackle, did you?
No, that's true. And loads of time the ball. But do you, what Seth was saying earlier on about Ten Hag, and he's had an awful lot of stuff to deal with. Everything from, as I said, starting off with Ronaldo, then Greenwood, then the injuries. You've got big personalities there as well. And then we look across to the other side of Manchester with Guardiola. I mean, you know, I think Guardiola would certainly stand up to anybody, and I'd say he's willing to take whatever measures are necessary. You were speaking about Phil Foden earlier on, you know, and the way he's treated him and the player he's now becoming. It's such a massive thing, having the right manager. But equally so, what I was saying about Klopp didn't seem to rely on his kind of on-field coaching skills. He relied an awful lot, or I'm speaking in the past tense, he's still there, but his coaches are extremely important to him on the coaching field. But is the United team now like aging from a point of view of some of the players they've brought in as short-term gaps? Like Casemiro looks a bit leggy this season. We're talking about Johnny Evans, again, stopgap measure. Like, for a club as wealthy as Manchester United, I mean, not to have the kind of the pulling power that they once had, and it's quite obvious they don't have it anymore.
You see Liverpool, everyone was pointing the finger at them for having that exact problem. They had an aging squad. They nipped the bottom one summer. They got rid of, you know, all of them. The Fabinho, Henderson, Firmino, I'm sure there's a couple of others. If you remember, there's a few of them went to Saudi, a few went to other clubs in Europe, and that's been United's problem, that we've never been able to sell players, we've never been able to shift players because of these massive contracts, not massive wages, and, you know, sending Phil Jones to 5 years. But I guess it goes back to what Klopp was good at. He said, like, when Alden was another one, that was an entire midfield he got rid of in one summer, and your man was still happy to see all of them go because he recognised that now these players have ran their course, and I'm happy to regenerate a new squad. You know, and United have in recent history haven't been able to do that with any deadwood.
Stay on that point for me now, because Varane at the back, is he going to go to Saudi Arabia this summer? Who's going to leave Manchester United this summer? Then I'll go to Jim, and we'll see what he thinks. So have a little think, Jim. Now, who's going to leave United? Seth, who do you reckon is going to be out the door this summer?
I do think that the new owners will be fairly stubborn in this. I think, given their background in sport, they know what they want, they know how to do it, they know when to do it, which is another important thing. So I don't think they're going to be wasting any time trying to shift on the deadwood. Like, Varane's in decline. What's the point of wasting time and keeping him around for another two seasons? Get rid. I think that'll be the approach this summer. So I think you'll be looking at Varane, Casemiro. Johnny Evans, probably, yeah. Depending on if we manage to sign another couple of centre halves. Cause
all depending on, yes.
If he's still reliable, you know. Anthony, if they're able to shift him on.
Now, that could be a cut-price sale. Yeah.
Sancho will be a cut-price sale.
Oh, yeah. He might, Dortmund might put the basket around the Churchgate collection and put a few funds together to keep him and sign him next year. Sancho was an odd one, because obviously there was issues there. And, I mean, if you're going to challenge the manager in any sport, I mean, Cody with Kilkenny, would you go up against Cody and Kilkenny? I don't think you'd last very long.
I think if Sancho decides to see what he likes Dortmund, which he probably does,
mm-hmm.
he's going to stay. I'm staying here.
Mm.
Yeah, but Dortmund, have they been known to fish out enough pennies, you know, from the side of the sofa to be able to afford it? Even though his cut price, United will still be looking for, I'd say, 40 million, considering they paid 72, 73 million.
That's right.
But the big thing is get him off the wage bill.
Yeah. And that's why they're paying even just half of his wages, just to subsidise that. Yeah.
I'm gonna try and be as controversial as possible. Marcus Rashford, gone in the summer. Has he done enough to stay at Manchester United, being a homegrown player? I know Paris Saint-Germain in the past have been interested, but would he have many suitors if it came to it? If they got a decent offer, would he go?
I don't know whether he would or not. They'll never let him go to another Premier League team.
I don't think he would play for another Prem team.
Probably not. Would he go abroad? Paris Saint-Germain doesn't appear to be the team or the club was 5 years ago. So where would he go? Do you know where he might go? But it depends on who's going to be the manager there next.
He's not going to Shannon Town anyway.
Bayern Munich.
True. Yeah. Because they're looking for a new manager as well, aren't they?
Yeah. And they're looking for the guy.
Bayer Leverkusen.
Oh, Alonso, yeah.
Yeah. So, and remember, it appears that Harry Kane has settled in extremely well there.
Mm.
He likes the lifestyle. And Harry Kane could be very influential
in picking the next manager.
Well, not picking the
manager.
With the player. If they decided, we'd like him.
You do think about that position on the left. They have, you know, Sané and Musiala behind Kane, but like Coman, Gnabry, they haven't really been able to staple that position down for the last 2 years, given Gnabry was sensational, but that was 4 or 5 years ago, and he's kind of fallen off a bit. So there is, I guess, a...
And you'll always have, but maybe the Real Madrid. But I think
they seem set up
with Real Madrid having the best player in the world. A woman said on the radio there this afternoon, Bellingham.
Can play for Ireland as well. You know.
Really?
Yeah, grandparent from.
Really?
I'll say Wexford.
He's something else. That
guy. Oh yeah.
And I mean, he's young as well. So maybe they couldn't afford to have him and Rashford, but you can't tell in Spanish football.
Yeah, would he fit the whole Galactico thing? Could you really see Marcus Rashford playing?
I don't know what he's like as a personality. There's no doubt that Bellingham seems to be a confident guy, quite prepared to put the boot into an opposition if he has to. He seems to have bought into the whole lifestyle in Real Madrid. It appears the players like him. He gets involved in the social stuff and all of that. That was a problem at Real Madrid with our Welsh friend.
Gareth Bale
seemed to lack that kind of personality. Fine, fabulous player, but never really bought into the lifestyle and
that Madrid character.
Yeah, and there's a bit of a cultural thing, I suppose, going on as well.
Well, I mean, I presume he learned Spanish and all of that. But nowadays, he retired quite young as well, if you think about it.
32?
Yeah.
Very young.
And they do reckon, if he decides to turn pro as a golfer, he's good enough to nearly make it.
Spent more time playing golf than football during his career.
Yeah, he did, yeah. And very friendly with JP McManus and all of that crowd and...
Well, rather than spreading spurious rumours about players, Seth, you weren't at the party that Marcus Rashford was at over in Belfast recently. No, you weren't. You weren't one of the entourage.
I've been at the bar he was at, and I'm not sure, but not on the.
I saw a few photographs in the outside. You wouldn't exactly. You'd walk past it without really taking much notice.
I don't know how he ended up there now. You know?
Really, what are those places?
Yeah. Was he with a few people from the north?
There's a player who played in the academy at the same time as he did, Roshan Williams. I think he captain United against Rochdale in one of the cups.
Okay.
I think he only got a couple of appearances, and then he went to Shrewsbury. I think a couple of them around that time went to Shrewsbury, like Sean Goss, I think he had German family. But yeah, so he moved to Larne, weirdly, just outside Belfast. And then I think Rashford just went over to celebrate the massive move to Larne. You know?
Well, you see, that tells you something about Rashford, that maybe he's a lot more comfortable with the guys he grew up with.
Yeah.
Well, he's Rashford for his age and what he's done, both from the health system in the UK and also as an author as well. You know, I mean, he's writing children's books and bits and pieces with Marcus Rashford in them. So I mean, it's, you know, he has an awful lot on his plate. But his main thing, his main job is a professional soccer player. Yeah. Has he fallen out of love with Manchester a little bit? From a point of view of when he does score, I mean, you know what I mean? There's a few, how do you say, mannerisms is like, you know, from a point of view of...
He's just going through the motions, really.
Well, there's a certain... I think there's... I don't think he's completely happy. But they say that a happy footballer, you have to be happy in your private life to be a happy footballer.
I don't think he's been helped by his PR team either. With his... you know, there's all these accusations, what you're saying, is he falling out of love? And then he's given an interview saying that, you know, he's United through and through. Nobody has any idea how much United means to him. And then next game, 2 days later, he looks like he's going through the motions. You know, you got to show it on...
What age is he?
What's the point of talking about it?
23, 24.
25, I think.
25.
Still a very, very young man.
He's old enough to have
very
sense.
Young, but I think it's a make or break kind of time in the next year or two, you know. If he's going to reach that top level, that's what Keane always says about consistency. You know, he needs to start showing 20-25 goals a season now for the next 3 or 4 years.
Do you know
what
would be key?
Go on.
The Nations Cup. The Nations, whatever it is that England are in the next...
Whether he'll keep his place for the upcoming tournament?
Yeah, how he performs.
He's in the England squad now.
He is in the England squad, yeah.
Which is very
if he performs well for England... Then people will sit up and start saying, hey, we could use him.
Yeah, he's back, yeah.
That's true. It's like the shop window, the international shop window.
A bit of confidence
with his English, his English teammates and all of that. And, you know, that maybe just, it depends on where he's comfortable. And if he plays well for England, you'll suddenly realise, why doesn't he do this for United? He mustn't really be happy.
Well, you know what? We're going to keep the listeners on the cliff edge for our next show because we're just coming to the end of this one, and I'm after remembering Gus Poyet was the Greece manager who Ireland might be lucky to as their next manager.
And he did say that he would be he would talk to the FAI.
He did. Listen, thanks a million to Jim Madden, accidentally popping out to East Clare today and winding up in the studio, and to my good friend and family member, Seth Dooley, for his, again, unsound, you say, complete surprise visit here. And we're great to have you down. And yeah, it's been wonderful to have you both in the studio today.
Thank you very much.
That was it here on Scariff Bay Community Radio for our special on the soccer for this March cold, wet and miserable day. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we'll talk to you very soon. Take care.